It hurt. Doc nodded to himself and brought the scalpel down again, making a cross cut. Red blood and dark yellow discharge oozed from the gash. As soon as Doc's hand was clear, I was spraying clean back and forth across the bloody X. When it hit the oozing secretion, the unhealthy yellow seemed to sizzle silently. It began to recede, almost like suds hit by a spray of water. It melted. Doc was breathing fast beside me.
Look at that!
I sprayed the area twice for good measure. Already the darker red was gone from Jamie's skin. All that was left was the normal red color of the human blood that flowed out. Okay, heal, I muttered. I found the right canister and tipped the little spout over the gashes in his skin. The clear liquid trickled in, coating the raw flesh and glistening there. The bleeding stopped wherever the heel spread. I poured half the container, surely twice as much as was needed, into the wound. Okay, hold the edges together for me, Doc. Doc was speechless at this point, though his mouth hung wide. He did as I asked, using two hands to get both cuts. Jamie laughed. That tickles! Doc's eyes bulged. I smeared seal across the X, watching with deep satisfaction as the edges fused together and faded to pink.
Can I see? Jamie asked.
Let him up, Ian. We're almost done. Jamie pulled himself up on his elbows, his eyes bright and curious. His sweaty, dirty hair was matted to his head. It didn't make sense now, next to the healthy glow of his skin.
See, I put this on, I said, brushing a handful of glitter across the cuts, and it makes the scar very faint. Like this.
I showed him the one on my arm. Jamie laughed.
But don't scars impress girls? Where did you get this stuff, Wanda? It's like magic.
Jared took me on a raid.
Seriously? That's awesome!
Doc touched the glistening powder residue on my hand, then held his fingers to his nose.
You should have seen her, Jared said. She was incredible.
I was surprised to hear his voice close behind me. I looked around for Sharon automatically and just caught sight of the flame of her hair leaving the room. Maggie was right behind her.
How sad.
How frightening. To be filled with so much hate that you could not even rejoice in the healing of a child. How did anyone ever come to that point?
She walked right into a hospital, right up to the alien there, and asked them to treat her injuries, bold as anything. Then, when they turned their backs, she robbed them blind.
Jared made it sound exciting. Jamie was enjoying it, too. His smile was huge.
Walked right out of there with medicine enough to last us all for a long time. She even waved at the bugger behind the counter as she drove away.
Jared laughed.
I couldn't do this for them, Melanie said, suddenly chagrined.
You're of more value to them than I would be.
Hush, I said.
It was not a time for sadness or jealousy. Only joy.
I wouldn't be here to help them without you. You saved him, too.
Jamie was staring at me with big eyes.
It wasn't that exciting, really, I told him.
He took my hand, and I squeezed his, my heart swollen with gratitude and love.
It was very easy. I'm a bugger, too, after all.
I didn't mean... Jared started to apologize.
I waved his protest away, smiling.
How did you explain the scar on your face? Doc asked. Didn't they wonder why you hadn't?
I had to have fresh injuries, of course. I was careful to leave them nothing to be suspicious about. I told them I'd fallen with a knife in my hand.
I nudged Jamie with my elbow.
It could happen to anyone. I was really flying high now. Everything seemed to glow from inside. The fabrics, the faces, the very walls. The crowd inside and outside the room had begun to murmur and question, but that noise was just a ringing in my ears, like the lingering sound after a bell is struck. A shimmer in the air. Nothing seemed real but the little circle of people I loved. Jamie and Jared and Ian and Jeb. Even Doc belonged in this perfect moment.
Fresh injuries? Ian asked in a flat voice.
I stared at him, surprised at the anger in his eyes. It was necessary. I had to hide my scar and learn how to heal Jamie.
Jared picked up my left wrist and stroked his finger over the faint pink line a few inches above it. It was horrible, he said, all the humor suddenly gone from his sober voice. She about hacked her hand off. I thought she'd never use it again.
Jamie's eyes widened in horror.
You cut yourself?
I squeezed his hand again. Don't be anxious. It wasn't that bad. I knew it would be healed quickly.
You should have seen her, Jared repeated in a low voice, still stroking my arm.
Ian's fingers brushed across my cheek. It felt nice, and I leaned into his hand when he left it there. I wondered if it was the no pain or just the joy of saving Jamie that made everything warm and glowing.
No more raids for you, Ian murmured. Of course she'll go out again, Jared said, his voice louder with surprise. Ian, she was absolutely phenomenal. You'd have to see to really understand. I'm only just beginning to guess at all the possibilities. Possibilities?
Ian's hand slid down my neck to my shoulder. He pulled me closer to his side, away from Jared.
At what cost to her? You let her almost hack her own hand off?
His fingers flexed around the top of my arm with his inflections. The anger didn't belong with the glow. No, Ian, it wasn't like that, I said. It was my idea. I had to.
Of course it was your idea, Ian growled. You'd do anything. You have no limits when it comes to these two. But Jared shouldn't have let you... What other way was there, Ian? Jared argued. Did you have a better plan? Do you think she'd be happier if she was unhurt but Jamie was gone?
I flinched at the hideous thought. Ian's voice was less hostile when he answered.
No, but I don't understand how you could sit there and watch her do that to herself.
Ian shook his head in disgust, and Jared's shoulders hunched in response.
What kind of a man? A practical one, Jeb interrupted.
We all looked up. Jeb stood over us, a bulky cardboard box in his arms.
It's why Jared's the best at getting what we need. Because he can do what has to be done. Or watch what has to be done. Even when watching's harder than doing. Now, I know it's closer to breakfast than supper, but I figured some of you haven't eaten in a while.
Jeb went on, changing the subject without subtlety.
Hungry, kid?
I'm not sure, Jamie admitted. I feel real hollow, but it doesn't feel bad.
That's the no pain, I said. You should eat.
And drink, Doc said. You need liquids.
Jeb let the unwieldy box fall onto the mattress.
Thought we might have a bit of a celebration. Dig in.
Wow, yum,
Jamie said, pawing through the box of dehydrated meals of the sort that hikers used.
Spaghetti, excellent.
Dibs on the garlic chicken, Jeb said. I've been missing garlic quite a bit, though I imagine no one misses it on my breath.
He chuckled. Jeb was prepared, with bottles of water and several portable stoves. People began to gather around, squeezing together in the small space. I was wedged between Jared and Ian, and I'd pulled Jamie onto my lap. Though he was much too old for this, he didn't protest. He must have sensed how much both of us needed that. Mel and I had to feel him alive and healthy and in our arms. The shimmering circle seemed to widen, enveloping the entire late-night supper party, making them family too. Everyone waited contentedly for Jeb to prepare the unexpected treats, in no hurry. Fear had been replaced by relief and happy news. Even Kyle, compressed into the small space on the other side of his brother, was not unwelcome in the circle. Melanie sighed in contentment. She was vibrantly aware of the warmth of the boy in our lap and the touch of the man who still stroked his hand against my arm. She wasn't even upset by Ian's arm around my shoulders. "You're feeling the no pain, too," I teased her. I don't think it's the no pain. Not for either of us. No, you're right. This is more than I've ever had. This is so much of what I lost.
What was it that made this human love so much more desirable to me than the love of my own kind? Was it because it was exclusive and capricious? The souls offered love and acceptance to all. Did I crave a greater challenge? This love was tricky. It had no hard and fast rules. It might be given for free, as with Jamie, or earned through time and hard work, as with Ian, or completely and heartbreakingly unattainable, as with Jared. Or was it simply better somehow? Because these humans could hate with so much fury, was the other end of the spectrum that they could love with more heart and zeal and fire? I didn't know why I had yearned after it so desperately. All I knew was that now that I had it, it was worth every ounce of risk and agony it had cost. It was better than I'd imagined. It was everything. By the time the food was prepared and consumed, the late, or rather early, hour had gotten to us all. People stumbled out of the crowded room toward their beds. As they left, there was more space. Those remaining slouched down where we were as room became available. Gradually, we melted in place until we were horizontal. My head ended up pillowed on Jared's stomach. His hand stroked my hair now and then. Jamie's face was against my chest, and his arms were around my neck. One of my arms wrapped around his shoulders. Ian's head was cushioned on my stomach, and he held my other hand to his face. I could feel Doc's long leg stretched beside mine, his shoe by my hip. Doc was asleep. I could hear him snoring. I may have even been touching Kyle somewhere. Jeb was sprawled on the bed. He belched, and Kyle chuckled.
Nicer night than I was planning for. I like it when pessimism goes unrewarded, Jeb mused. Thanks, Wanda.
I sighed, half asleep.
Next time she raids,
Kyle said, somewhere on the other side of Jared's body. A big yawn interrupted his sentence.
Next time she raids, I'm coming too. She's not going out again,
Ian answered, his body tensing. I brushed my hand against his face, trying to soothe him. Of course not, I murmured to him. I don't have to go anywhere unless I'm needed. I don't mind staying in here.
I'm not talking about keeping you prisoner, Wanda, Ian explained, irritated. You can go anywhere you want, as far as I'm concerned. Jogging on the highway if you'd like that. But not a raid. I'm talking about keeping you safe.
We need her,
Jared said, his voice harder than I wanted to hear it.
We got by fine without her before.
Fine?
Jamie would have died without her. She can get things for us that no one else can. She's a person, Jared, not a tool. I know that. I didn't say that.
It's up to Wanda, I'd say.
Jeb interrupted the argument just as I was about to. My hand was holding Ian down now, and I could feel Jared's body shifting under my head as he prepared to get up. Jeb's words froze them in place.
You can't leave it up to her, Jeb, Ian protested.
Why not? Seems like she's got her own mind. Is it your job to make decisions for her?
I'll tell you why not, Ian grumbled. Wanda?
Yes, Ian?
Do you want to go out on raids?
If I can help, of course I should go.
That's not what I asked, Wanda.
I was quiet for a moment, trying to remember his question to see how I'd gotten it wrong.
See, Jeb? She never takes into account her own wants, her own happiness, her own health, even. She'd do anything we asked her to, even if it got her killed. It's not fair to ask her things the way we'd ask each other. We stop to think about ourselves. She doesn't.
It was quiet. No one answered, Ian. The silence dragged on until I felt compelled to speak for myself. That's not true, I said. I think about myself all the time, and I want to help. Doesn't that count?
It made me so happy to help Jamie tonight. Can't I find happiness the way I want to?
Ian sighed. See what I mean?
Well, I can't tell her she can't go if she wants to, Jeb said. She's not a prisoner anymore.
But we don't have to ask.
Jared was very quiet through all this. Jamie was quiet, too, but I was pretty sure he was asleep. I knew Jared wasn't. His hand was tracing random patterns on the side of my face, glowing, burning patterns. You don't need to ask, I said. I volunteer. It really wasn't frightening. Not at all. The other souls are very kind. I'm not afraid of them. It was almost too easy.
Easy? Cutting your... I interrupted Ian quickly.
That was an emergency. I won't have to do that again. I paused for a second. Right? I checked.
Ian groaned. If she goes, I'm going to, he said in a bleak tone. Someone has to protect her from herself.
And I'll be there to protect the rest of us from her, Kyle said with a chuckle.
Then he grunted and said, ow!
I was too tired to lift my head to see who had hit Kyle now.
And I'll be there to bring you all back alive, Jared murmured.
Chapter 47
Employed.
This is too easy. It's not really even fun anymore, Kyle complained. You wanted to come, Ian reminded him.
He and Ian were in the windowless back of the van, sorting through the non-perishable groceries and toiletries I'd just collected from the store. It was the middle of the day, and the sun was shining on Wichita. It was not as hot as the Arizona desert, but it was more humid. The air swarmed with tiny flying bugs. Jared drove toward the highway out of town, carefully keeping below the speed limit. This continued to irritate him.
Getting tired of shopping yet, Wanda? Ian asked me.
No, I don't mind it.
You always say that. Isn't there anything you mind?
I mind being away from Jamie, and I mind being outside a little bit, during the day especially. It's like the opposite of claustrophobia. Everything is too open. Does that bother you, too?
Sometimes. We don't go out during the day much. At least she gets to stretch her legs, Kyle muttered. I don't know why you want to hear her complain.
Because it's so uncommon, which makes it a nice change from listening to you complain.
I tuned them out. Once Ian and Kyle got started, they usually went on for a while. I consulted the map. Oklahoma City next? I asked Jared.
And a few small towns on the way, if you're up for it. He answered, eyes on the road.
I am. Jared rarely lost his focus when on a raid. He didn't relax into relieved banter the way Ian and Kyle did every time I completed another mission successfully. It made me smile when they used that word. Mission. That sounded so formidable. In reality, it was just a trip to the store. Just like I'd done 100 times in San Diego when I was only feeding myself. Like Kyle said, it was too easy to provide any excitement. I pushed my cart up and down the aisles. I smiled at the souls who smiled at me, and I filled my cart with things that would last. I usually grabbed a few things that wouldn't, for the men hiding in the back of the van. Pre-made sandwiches from the deli. Things like that for our meals. And maybe a treat or two. Ian had a fondness for mint chocolate chip ice cream. Kyle liked caramel sweets best. Jared ate anything he was offered. It seemed as if he'd given up favorites many years before, embracing a life where wants were unwelcome and even needs were carefully assessed before they were met. Another reason he was good at this life. He saw priorities uncontaminated by personal desire. Occasionally in the smaller towns someone would notice me, would speak to me. I had my lines down so well that I could probably have fooled a human by this point.
Hi there. New in town?
Yes. Brand new.
What brings you to Byers?
I was always careful to check the map before I left the van, so the town's name would be familiar. My partner travels a lot. He's a photographer.
How wonderful! An artist! Well, there's certainly a lot of beautiful land around here.
Originally, I'd been the artist, but I'd found that throwing in the information that I was already partnered saved me some time when I was speaking to males. Thank you so much for your help.
You're very welcome. Come back soon.
I'd only had to speak to a pharmacist once, in Salt Lake City. After that, I'd known what to look for. A sheepish smile. I'm not sure I'm getting the right nutrition. I can't seem to avoid the junk food. This body has such a sweet tooth.
You need to be wise, Thousand Petals. I know it's easy to give in to your cravings, but try to think about what you're eating. In the meantime, you should take a supplement.
Health. Such an obvious title on the bottle, it made me feel silly for asking.
Would you like the ones that taste like strawberries or the ones that taste like chocolate?
Could I try both? And the pleasant soul named Earthborn gave me both of the large bottles. Not very challenging. The only fear or sense of danger I ever felt came when I thought of the small cyanide pill that I always kept in an easily reachable pocket, just in case.
You should get new clothes in the next town, Jared said.
Again?
Those are looking a little creased.
Okay,
I agreed.
I didn't like the excess, but the steadily growing pile of dirty laundry wouldn't go to waste. Lily and Heidi and Paige were all close to my size, and they would be grateful for something new to wear. The men rarely bothered with things like clothes when they were raiding. Every foray was life or death. Clothes were not a priority, nor were the gentle soaps and shampoos that I'd been collecting at every store.
You should probably clean up, too, Jared said with a sigh. Guess that means a hotel tonight.
Keeping up appearances was not something they'd worried about before. Of course, I was the only one who had to look as if I was a part of civilization from close up. The men wore jeans and dark t-shirts now, things that didn't show dirt or attract attention in the brief moments they might be seen. They all hated sleeping in the roadside inns, succumbing to unconsciousness inside the very mouth of the enemy. It scared them more than anything else we did. Ian said he'd rather charge an armed seeker. Kyle simply refused. He mostly slept in the van during the day and then sat up at night, acting as sentry. For me, it was as easy as shopping in the stores. I checked us in, made conversation with the clerk, told the story about my photographer partner and the friend who was traveling with us, just in case someone saw all three of us enter the room. I used generic names from unremarkable planets. Sometimes we were bats. Wordkeeper, sings the egg song, and skyroost. Sometimes we were seaweeds, twisting eyes, seas to the surface, and second sunrise. I changed the names every time. Not that anyone was trying to trace our path. It just made Melanie feel safer to do that. All this made her feel like a character in a human movie about espionage. The hard part, the part I really minded, not that I would say this in front of Kyle, who was so quick to doubt my intentions, was all the taking without giving anything back. It had never bothered me to shop in San Diego. I took what I needed and nothing more. Then I spent my days at the university giving back to the community by sharing my knowledge. Not a taxing calling, but one I took seriously. I took my turns at the less appealing chores. I did my day collecting garbage and cleaning streets. We all did. And now I took so much more and gave nothing in return. It made me feel selfish and wrong.
It's not for yourself. It's for the others, Mel reminded me when I brooded.
It still feels wrong. Even you can feel that, can't you?
Don't think about it, was her solution.
I was glad we were on the home stretch of our long raid. Tomorrow we would visit our growing cache, a moving truck we kept hidden within a day's reach of our path, and clean out the van for the last time. Just a few more cities, a few more days, down through Oklahoma, then New Mexico, and then a straight drive through Arizona with no stops. Home again, at last. When we slept in hotels rather than in the crowded van, we usually checked in after dark and left before dawn to keep the souls from getting a good look at us. Not really necessary. Jared and Ian were beginning to realize that. This night, because we'd had such a successful day, the van was completely full. Kyle would have little space, and because Ian thought I looked tired, we stopped early. The sun had not set when I returned to the van with the plastic keycard. The little inn was not very busy. We parked close to our room, and Jared and Ian went straight from the van to the room in a matter of 5 or 6 steps, their eyes on the ground. On their necks, small, faint pink lines provided camouflage. Jared carried a half-empty suitcase. No one looked at them or me. Inside, the room darkening curtains were drawn, and the men relaxed a little bit. Ian lounged on the bed he and Jared would use and flipped on the TV. Jared put the suitcase on the table, took out our dinner, cooled, greasy, breaded chicken strips I'd ordered from the deli in the last store, and passed it around. I sat by the window, peeking through the corner at the falling sun as I ate.
"You have to admit, Wanda, we humans had better entertainment," Ian teased.
On the television screen, two souls were speaking their lines clearly, their bodies held with perfect posture. It wasn't hard to pick up what was happening in the story because there wasn't a lot of variety in the scripts souls wrote. In this one, two souls were reconnecting after a long separation. The male's stint with the sea weeds had come between them, but he'd chosen to be human because he guessed his partner from the Mists planet would be drawn to these warm-blooded hosts. And, miracle of miracles, he'd found her here. They all had happy endings. You have to consider the intended audience.
True. I wish they'd run old human shows again.
He flipped through the channels and frowned.
Used to be a few of them on.
They were too disturbing. They had to be replaced with things that weren't so violent.
The Brady Bunch?
I laughed. I'd seen that show in San Diego, and Melanie knew it from her childhood. It condoned aggression. I remember one where a little male child punched a bully, and that was portrayed as being the right thing to do. There was blood. Ian shook his head in disbelief, but returned to the show with the former seaweed. He laughed at the wrong parts, the parts that were supposed to be touching. I stared out the window, watching something much more interesting than the predictable story on television. Across the two-lane road from the inn was a small park, bordered on one side by a school and on the other by a field where cows grazed. There were a few young trees and an old-fashioned playground with a sandbox, a slide, a set of monkey bars, and one of those hand-pulled merry-go-rounds. Of course, there was a swing set, too, and that was the only equipment being used currently. A little family was taking advantage of the cooler evening air. The father had some silver in his dark hair at the temples. The mother looked many years his junior. Her red-brown hair was pulled back in a long ponytail that bobbed when she moved. They had a little boy, no more than a year old. The father pushed the child in the swing from behind, while the mother stood in front, leaning in to kiss his forehead when he swung her way, making him giggle so hard that his chubby little face was bright red. This had her laughing, too. I could see her body shake with it, her hair dancing.
What are you staring at, Wanda?
Jared's question wasn't anxious because I was smiling softly at the surprising scene. Something I've never seen in all my lives. I'm staring at hope. Jared came to stand behind me, peeking out over my shoulder.
What do you mean?
His eyes swept across the buildings and the road, not pausing on the playing family. I caught his chin and pointed his face in the right direction. He didn't so much as flinch at my unexpected touch, and that gave me a strange jolt of warmth in the pit of my stomach. Look, I said.
What am I looking at?
The only hope for survival I've ever seen for a host species.
Where? He demanded, bewildered.
I was aware of Ian close behind us now, listening silently. See? I pointed at the laughing mother. See how she loves her human child? At that moment, the woman snatched her son from the swing and squeezed him in a tight embrace, covering his face with kisses. He cooed and flailed. Just a baby. Not the miniature adult he would have been if he carried one of my kind. Jared gasped.
The baby is human? How? Why? For how long?
I shrugged. I've never seen this before. I don't know. She has not given him up for a host. I can't imagine that she would be forced. Motherhood is all but worshipped among my kind. If she is unwilling... I shook my head. I have no idea how that will be handled. This doesn't happen elsewhere. The emotions of these bodies are so much stronger than logic. I glanced up at Jared and Ian. They were both staring open-mouthed at the interspecies family in the park. No, I murmured to myself. No one would force the parents if they wanted the child. And just look at them. The father had his arms around both the mother and the child now. He looked down at his host body's biological son with staggering tenderness in his eyes. Aside from ourselves, this is the first planet we've discovered with live births. Yours certainly isn't the easiest or most prolific system. I wonder if that's the difference, or if it's the helplessness of your young. Everywhere else, reproduction is through some form of eggs or seeds. Many parents never even meet their young. I wonder... I trailed off, my thoughts full of speculation. The mother lifted her face to her partner and he kissed her lips. The human child crowed with delight. Perhaps someday, some of my kind and some of yours will live in peace. Wouldn't that be strange? Neither man could tear his eyes from the miracle in front of them. The family was leaving. The mother dusted the sand off her jeans while the father took the boy. Then, holding hands that they swung between them, the souls strolled through the apartments with their human child. Ian swallowed loudly. We didn't speak for the rest of the evening, all of us made thoughtful by what we'd seen. We went to sleep early so we could rise early and get back to work. I slept alone in the bed farthest from the door. This made me uncomfortable. The two big men did not fit easily on the other bed. Ian tended to sprawl when he was deeply asleep, and Jared was not above throwing punches when that happened. Both of them would be more comfortable if I shared. I slept in a small ball now. Maybe it was the two open spaces I moved in all day that had me constricting in on myself at night. Or maybe I was just so used to curling up to sleep in the tiny space behind the passenger seat on the van's floor that I'd forgotten how to sleep straight. But I knew why no one asked me to share. The first night, the men had unhappily realized the necessity of a hotel shower for me. I'd heard Ian and Jared talking about me over the whir of the bathroom fan.
"Not fair to ask her to choose," Ian was saying.
He kept his voice low, but the fan was not loud enough to drown it out. The hotel room was very small.
"Why not? It's fairer to tell her where she's going to sleep. Don't you think it's more polite for someone else? But Wanda will agonize over this. She'll be trying so hard to please us both, she'll make herself miserable."
"Jealous again?"
"Not this time. I just know how she thinks."
There was a silence. Ian was right. He did know how I thought. He'd probably already foreseen that given the slightest hint that Jared would prefer it, I would choose to sleep beside Jared and then keep myself awake, worrying that I'd made Jared unhappy by being there and that I'd hurt Ian's feelings into the bargain.
"Fine," Jared snapped. "But if you try cuddling up to me tonight, so help me, O'Shea."
Ian chuckled.
"Not to sound overly arrogant, but to be perfectly honest, Jared, were I so inclined, I think I could do better."
Despite feeling a little guilty about wasting so much needed space, I probably did sleep better alone. We didn't have to go to a hotel again. The days started to pass more quickly.
as if even the seconds were trying to run home. I could feel a strange western pull on my body. We were all eager to get back to our dark, crowded haven. Even Jared got careless. It was late. No sunlight left lingering behind the western mountains. Behind us, Ian and Kyle were taking turns driving the big moving truck loaded with our spoils, just as Jared and I took turns with the van. They had to drive the heavy vehicle more carefully than Jared did the van. The headlights had faded slowly into the distance until they disappeared around a wide curve in the road. We were on the home stretch. Tucson was behind us. In a few short hours, I would see Jamie. We would unload the welcome provisions surrounded by smiling faces. A real homecoming. My first, I realized. For once, the return would bring nothing but joy. We carried no doomed hostages this time. I wasn't paying attention to anything but anticipation. The road didn't seem to be flying by too fast. It couldn't fly past fast enough as far as I was concerned. The truck's headlights reappeared behind us. "Kyle must be driving," I murmured. "They're catching up." And then the red and blue light suddenly spun out in the dark night behind us. They reflected off all the mirrors, dancing spots of color across the roof, the seats, our frozen faces, and the dashboard, where the needle on the speed gauge showed that we were traveling 20 miles over the speed limit. The sound of a siren pierced the desert calm. Chapter 48. Detained. The red and blue lights swirled in time with the siren's cry. Before the souls had come to this place, these lights and sounds had had only one meaning: the law, the keepers of the peace, the punishers of offenders. Now, again, the flashing colors and angry noise had only one meaning, a very similar meaning: still the keepers of the peace, still the punishers. Seekers. It wasn't as common a sight or sound as it had been before. The police force was only needed to help in cases of accidents or other emergencies, not to enforce laws. Most civil servants didn't have vehicles with sirens, unless the vehicle was an ambulance or a fire truck. This low, sleek car behind us was not for any accident. This was a vehicle made for pursuit. I'd never seen anything quite like it before, but I knew exactly what it meant. Jared was frozen, his foot still pushing down on the gas pedal. I could see that he was trying to find a solution, a way to outrun them in this decrepit van, or a way to evade them, to hide our wide white profile in the low, gaunt brush of the desert without leading them back to the rest, without giving everyone away. We were so close to the others now. They slumbered, unaware. When he gave up after 2 seconds of frantic thought, he exhaled.
"I'm so sorry, Wanda," he whispered. "I blew it."
"Jared?" He reached for my hand and eased up on the gas. The car started to slow.
"Got your pill?" he choked.
"Yes,"
I whispered. "Can Mel hear me?"
"Yes." The thought was a sob. "Yes." My voice only barely escaped being a sob, too.
"I love you, Mel. Sorry."
"She loves you more than anything."
A short, aching silence. "Wanda, I care about you, too. You're a good person, Wanda. You deserve better than what I've given you. Better than this."
He had something small, much too small to be so deadly, between his fingers.
"Wait," I gasped. "He could not die. Wanda, we can't take the chance. We can't outrun them. Not in this. If we try to run, 1,000 of them will swarm after us. Think of Jamie."
The van was slowing, drifting to the shoulder. "Give me one try," I begged. I fumbled quickly for the pill in my pocket. I pinched it between my thumb and forefinger and held it up. "Let me try to lie us out of this. I'll swallow it right away if anything goes wrong."
"You'll never lie your way past a seeker."
"Let me try. Quick!" I pulled off my seatbelt and crouched beside him, unfastening his. "Switch with me, fast, before they're close enough to see."
"Wanda,
one try. Hurry!" He was the best at split-second decisions.
Smooth and fast, he was out of the driver's seat and over my crouched body. I rolled up into his seat while he took mine.
"Seatbelt," I ordered tersely. "Close your eyes, turn your head away."
He did as I said. It was too dark to see it, but his new soft pink scar would be visible from this angle. I strapped my seatbelt on and then leaned my head back. Lying with my body, that was the key. It was simply a matter of the right movements, imitation, like the actors on the TV program, only better. Like a human.
"Help me, Mel," I murmured.
"I can't help you be a better soul, Wanda. But you can do this. Save him. I know you can." A better soul. I only had to be myself. It was late. I was tired. I wouldn't have to act that part. I let my eyelids droop, let my body sag against the seat. Chagrin. I could do chagrin. I could feel it now. My mouth turned down into a sheepish grimace. The Seeker's car did not park behind us the way I could feel Mel expected. It stopped across the road, on the shoulder, facing the wrong way for that lane's traffic flow. A dazzling light exploded through the window of the other car. I blinked into it, raising my hand to shade my face with deliberate slowness. Faintly, past the glare of the spotlight, I saw the gleam of my eyes bounce against the road as I looked down. A car door slammed. One set of footsteps made a pattern of low thuds as someone crossed the pavement. There was no sound of dirt or rocks, so the Seeker had emerged from the passenger side. Two of them at least, but only one coming to interrogate me. This was a good sign. A sign of comfort and confidence. My glowing eyes were a talisman, a compass that could not fail, like the North Star, undoubtable. Lying with my body was not the key. Telling the truth with it was enough. I had something in common with the human baby in the park. Nothing like me had ever existed before. The Seeker's body blocked the light, and I could see again. It was a man. Probably middle-aged. His features conflicted with one another, making it hard to tell. His hair was all white, but his face was smooth and unwrinkled. He wore a t-shirt and shorts, a blocky gun clearly visible on his hip. One hand rested on the butt of the weapon. In his other hand was a dark flashlight. He didn't turn it on.
"Having a problem, miss?" he said when he was a few feet away. "You were going much too fast for safety."
His eyes were restless. They swiftly appraised my expression, which was hopefully sleepy, and then ran along the length of the van, darted into the darkness behind us, flashed forward to the stretch of highway ahead lit by our headlights, and came back to my face. They repeated the course another time. He was anxious. This knowledge made my palms sweaty, but I tried to keep the panic from my voice. "I'm so sorry," I apologized in a loud whisper. I glanced at Jared as if checking to see whether our words had woken him. I think I might have fallen asleep. I didn't realize I was so tired. I tried to smile remorsefully. I could tell I sounded stiff, like the two careful actors on the television. The Seeker's eyes traced their route again, this time lingering on Jared. My heart jumped painfully against the inside of my ribs. I pinched the pill tighter. "It was irresponsible for me to drive for so long without sleep," I said quickly, trying again to smile a little. "I thought we could make it to Phoenix before I would need rest. I'm very sorry."
"What's your name, miss?"
His voice was not harsh, but neither was it warm. He kept it low, though. Following my cue. "Leaves above," I said, using the name from the last hotel. Would he want to check my story? I might need some place to refer him to.
"Upside down flower?" he guessed.
His eyes flickered around their course. "Yes, I was."
"My partner, too. Were you on the island?"
"No," I said quickly. "The mainland. Between the great rivers." He nodded. Perhaps a little disappointed. "Should I go back to Tucson?" I asked.
I think I'm quite awake now. Or maybe I should take a nap right here first.
No, he interrupted me in a louder voice. I jumped, startled, and the little pill slipped from my fingers. It dropped to the metal floor with a faintly audible clink. I felt the blood drain from my face as though a plug had been pulled.
Didn't mean to startle you,
he apologized quickly, his eyes repeating their anxious circle.
But you shouldn't linger here.
Why?
I managed to whisper. My fingers twitched anxiously at the empty air.
There was a disappearance recently.
I don't understand. A disappearance?
It could have been an accident, but there might be...
He hesitated, unwilling to say the word.
Humans may be in this area.
Humans?
I squeaked, too loud. He heard the fear in my voice and interpreted it the only way he could.
There's no proof of that leaves above. No sightings or anything. Don't be anxious. But you should proceed on to Phoenix without unnecessary delay.
Of course. Or maybe Tucson? That would be closer.
There's no danger. You can continue with your plans.
If you're sure, Seeker.
I'm quite sure. Just don't go wandering off into the desert, Flower.
He smiled. The expression warmed his face, making it kind. Just like all the other souls I'd dealt with. He wasn't anxious about me, but for me. He wasn't listening for lies, and he probably wouldn't recognize them if he was. Just another soul.
I wasn't planning on it.
I smiled back at him.
I'll be more careful.
I know I couldn't fall asleep now. I glanced at the desert out Jared's window with a wary expression so the Seeker would think that fear was making me alert. My expression tensed into a taut mask as I caught sight of a pair of lights reflected in the side mirror. Jared's spine stiffened at the same time, but he held his pose. It looked too tight. My eyes darted back to the Seeker's face.
I can help with that,
he said, still smiling, but looking down now as he fumbled to remove something from his pocket. He hadn't seen the change in my face. I tried to control the muscles in my cheeks to make them relax, but I couldn't concentrate hard enough to make it happen. In the rearview mirror, the headlights got closer.
You should not use this often, the Seeker went on, searching the other pocket now. It's not harmful, of course, or the healers wouldn't have us give it out. But if you use it frequently, it will alter your sleep cycles. Ah, here it is. Awake.
The lights slowed as they approached.
Just drive by, I begged in my head. Don't stop, don't stop, don't stop.
Let it be Kyle at the wheel, Melanie added, thinking the words like a prayer.
Don't stop, just drive, don't stop, just drive,
miss.
I blinked, trying to focus.
Awake?
Just inhale this, leaves above.
He had a thin white aerosol can in his hand. He sprayed a puff of mist into the air in front of my face. I leaned forward obediently and took a sniff, my eyes darting to the mirror at the same time.
It's grapefruit scented, the Seeker said. Nice, don't you think?
Very nice.
My brain was suddenly sharp, focused. The big moving truck slowed and then idled on the road behind us.
No!
Mel and I shouted together. I searched the dark floor for 1/2 second, hoping against hope that the little pill would be visible. I couldn't even make out my feet. The Seeker glanced absently at the truck and then waved it forward. I looked back at the truck, too, a forced smile on my face. I couldn't see who was driving. My eyes reflected the headlights, shot out faint beams of their own. The truck hesitated. The Seeker waved again more broadly this time.
Go ahead, he muttered to himself.
Drive, drive, drive!
Beside me, Jared's hand was clenched in a fist. Slowly, the big truck shuddered into first gear and then inched forward through the space between the Seeker's vehicle and ours. The Seeker's spotlight outlined two silhouettes. Two black profiles, both facing straight forward. The one in the driver's seat had a crooked nose. Mel and I both exhaled in relief.
How do you feel?
Alert,
I told the Seeker.
It will wear off in about 4 hours.
Thank you.
The Seeker chuckled.
Thank you, leaves above. When we saw you racing down the road, we thought we might have humans on our hands. I was sweating, but not from the heat.
I shuddered.
Don't worry. You'll be perfectly fine. If you'd like, we can follow you to Phoenix.
I'm just fine. You don't need to trouble yourself.
That was nice to meet you. I'll be pleased when my shift is over so that I can go home and tell my partner I met another green first flower. She'll be so excited.
Tell her brightest sun, longest day for me, I said, giving him the earthly translation of the common greeting and farewell on the flower planet.
Certainly. Have a pleasant journey.
And you have a pleasant night. He stepped back, and the spotlight hit my eyes again. I blinked furiously.
Cut it, Hank,
the Seeker said, shading his eyes as he turned to walk toward the car. The night turned black again, and I forced another smile toward the invisible Seeker named Hank. I started the engine with shaking hands. The Seekers were faster. The little black car with the incongruous light bar atop it purred to life. It executed a sharp U-turn, and then the taillights were all I could see. They disappeared quickly into the night. I pulled back onto the road. My heart pumped the blood through my veins in hard little bursts. I could feel the fierce pulse throbbing through to my fingertips.
They're gone,
I whispered through my suddenly chattering teeth. I heard Jared swallow.
That was close, he said.
I thought Kyle was going to stop.
Me too.
Neither of us could speak above a whisper.
The Seeker bought it.
His teeth were still clenched in anxiety.
Yes.
I wouldn't have. Your acting hasn't improved much.
I shrugged. My body was so rigid it all moved together.
They can't not believe me. What I am, well, it's something impossible. Something that shouldn't exist.
Something unbelievable, he agreed. Something wonderful.
His praise thawed some of the ice in my stomach, in my veins. Seekers aren't all that different from the rest of them, I murmured to myself. Nothing to be especially afraid of. He shook his head back and forth slowly.
There really isn't anything you can't do, is there?
I wasn't sure how to respond to that.
Having you with us is going to change everything, he continued under his breath,
talking to himself now. I could feel how his words made Melanie sad, but she was not angry this time. She was resigned.
You can help them. You can protect them better than I could.
She sighed. The slow-moving taillights did not frighten me when they appeared on the road ahead. They were familiar, a relief. I sped up, just a little, still a few miles below the limit, to pass them. Jared pulled a flashlight out of the glove compartment. I understood what he was doing. Reassurance. He held the light to his own eyes as we passed the cab of the truck. I looked past him, through the other window. Kyle nodded once at Jared and took a deep breath. Ian was leaning anxiously around him, his eyes focused on me. I waved once, and he grimaced. We were getting close to our hidden exit.
Should I go all the way to Phoenix?
Jared thought about it.
No. They might see us on the way back and stop us again. I don't think they're following. They're focused on the road.
No, they won't follow.
I was sure of this.
Let's go home, then.
Home,
I agreed wholeheartedly. We killed the lights, and so did Kyle behind us. We would take the vehicles right to the caves and unload quickly so they could be hidden before morning. The little overhang by the entrance would not hide them from view. I rolled my eyes as I thought of the way into and out of the caves. The big mystery I hadn't been able to solve for myself. Jeb was so tricky. Tricky. Just like the directions he'd given Mel, the lines he'd carved onto the back of her photo album. They didn't lead to his cave hideout at all. No, instead they made the person following them parade back and forth in front of his secret place, giving him ample opportunity to decide whether or not to extend an invitation inside.
What do you think happened?
Jared asked, interrupting my thoughts.
What do you mean?
The recent disappearance the Seeker mentioned.
I stared ahead blankly.
Wouldn't that be me?
I don't think you would count as recent, Wanda. Besides, they weren't watching the freeway before we left. That's new. They're looking for us. Here.
His eyes narrowed, while mine widened.
What have they been doing?
Jared suddenly exploded, slapping his hand loudly against the dashboard. I jumped.
You think Jeb and the others did something?
He didn't answer me. He just stared out across the star-bright desert with furious eyes.
I didn't understand. Why would the Seekers be looking for humans just because someone had disappeared in the desert? Accidents did happen. Why would they jump to that particular conclusion? And why was Jared angry? Our family in the caves wouldn't do anything to draw attention to themselves. They knew better than that. They wouldn't go outside unless there was an emergency of some kind. Or something they felt was urgent. Necessary. Had Doc and Jeb been taking advantage of my absence? Jeb had only agreed to stop slaughtering people and souls while I was under the same roof. Was this their compromise?
You okay?
Jared asked. My throat was too thick to answer. I shook my head. Tears streamed down my cheeks and fell from my chin to my lap.
Maybe I'd better drive.
I shook my head again. I could see well enough. He didn't argue with me. I was still crying silently when we got to the little mountain that hid our vast cave system. It was actually just a hill, an insignificant outcropping of volcanic rock, like so many others, sparsely decorated with spindly creosote and flat-bladed prickly pears. The thousands of tiny vents were invisible, lost in the jumble of loose purple rocks. Somewhere smoke would be rising, black on black. I got out of the van and leaned against the door, wiping my eyes. Jared came to stand beside me. He hesitated, then put a hand on my shoulder.
Sorry. I didn't know they were planning this. I had no idea. They shouldn't have...
But he only thought that because they'd somehow gotten caught. The moving truck rumbled to a stop behind us. Two doors slammed shut, and then feet were running toward us.
What happened?
Kyle demanded, there first. Ian was right behind him. He took one look at my expression, at the tears still running down my cheeks, at Jared's hand on my shoulder, and then rushed forward and threw his arms around me. He pulled me into his chest. I didn't know why this made me cry harder. I clung to him while my tears leaked onto his shirt.
It's okay. You did great. It's over. Seeker's not the problem, Ian, Jared said, voice strained, his hand still touching me, though he had to lean forward to preserve that point of contact. Huh? They were watching the road for a reason. Sounds like Doc's been working in our absence.
I shuddered, and for a moment it seemed like I could taste silver blood in the back of my throat.
Why, those...
Ian's fury robbed him of speech. He couldn't finish his sentence.
Nice,
Kyle said in a disgusted tone.
Idiots! We're gone for a few weeks and they've got the Seekers on patrol. They could have just asked us to shut up, Kyle,
Jared said harshly.
That's neither here nor there at the moment. We've got to get this all unloaded fast. Who knows how many are watching for us. Let's grab a load and then get some more hands.
I shook Ian off so that I could help. The tears did not stop running. Ian stayed close to my side, taking the heavy flat of canned soup I picked up and replacing it with a big but light box of pasta. We started down the steep pathway in, Jared leading. The utter blackness did not bother me. I still didn't know this path well, but it wasn't difficult. Straight down, then straight up. We were halfway there when a familiar voice called out from a distance. It echoed down the tunnel, fracturing.
They're back! Back! Back!
Jamie was shouting. I tried to dry my tears on my shoulder, but I couldn't get them all. A blue light approached, bouncing as the carrier ran. Then Jamie bounded into view. His face threw me. I was trying to compose myself to greet him, assuming he would be joyful and not wanting to upset him. But Jamie was already upset. His face was white and tense.
His eyes rimmed in red. His dirty cheeks had rivulets through the dust there, tracks made by tears.
"Jamie?"
Jared and I said together, dropping our boxes to the floor. Jamie ran straight for me and threw his arms around my waist.
"Oh, Wanda! Oh, Jared!" he sobbed. "Wes is dead! He's dead! The Seeker killed him!"
Chapter 49. Interrogated. I killed Wes. My hands, scratched and bruised and painted with purple dust in the course of the frantic unloading, might as well have been painted red with his blood. Wes was dead, and it was as much my fault as if I'd pulled the trigger myself. All of us but five were gathered in the kitchen now that the truck was unloaded, eating some of the perishables we'd picked up on the final shopping trip, cheese and fresh bread with milk, and listening to Jeb and Doc as they explained everything to Jared, Ian, and Kyle. I sat a little space away from the others, my head in my hands, too numb with grief and guilt to ask questions the way they did. Jamie sat with me. He patted my back now and then. Wes was already buried in the dark grotto beside Walter. He had died 4 days ago, the night that Jared and Ian and I had sat watching the family in the park. I would never see my friend again, never hear his voice. Tears splashed on the stone beneath me, and Jamie's pats increased in tempo. Andy and Paige were not here. They'd driven the truck and the van back to their hiding places. They would take the jeep from there to its usual rough garage, and then they'd have to walk the rest of the way home. They would be back before sunrise. Lily was not here.
"She's not doing so well," Jamie had murmured when he'd caught me scanning the room for her.
I didn't want to know any more. I could imagine well enough. Aaron and Brant were not here. Brant now bore a smooth, pink, circular scar in the hollow space beneath his left collarbone. The bullet had missed his heart and lungs by a hair and then burrowed halfway through his shoulder blade, trying to escape. Doc had used most of the heel, getting it out of him. Brant was fine now. Wes's bullet had been better aimed. It had pierced his high, olive-skinned forehead and blown out the back of his head. There was nothing Doc could have done, even if he'd been right there with them, a gallon of heel at his disposal. Brant, who now carried in a holster on his hip a boxy, heavy trophy from the encounter, was with Aaron. They were in the tunnel where we would have stored our spoils if it had not been occupied, if it was not being used as a prison again. As if losing Wes was not enough. It seemed hideously wrong to me that the numbers remained the same. 35 living bodies, just like before I'd come to the caves. Wes and Walter were gone, but I was here. And now so was the Seeker. My Seeker. If I'd just gone straight to Tucson, if I had just stayed in San Diego, if I had just skipped this planet and gone somewhere entirely different, if I'd given myself as a mother like anyone else would have after 5 or 6 planets, if I had not come here, if I had not given the Seeker the clues she needed to follow, then Wes would be alive. It had taken her longer than me to figure them out, but when she didn't have to pursue them with caution. She'd barreled through the desert in an all-terrain SUV, leaving bright new scars across the fragile desert landscape, each pass getting closer. They had to do something. They had to stop her. I had killed Wes. They still would have caught me in the first place, Wanda. I led them here, not you. I was too miserable to answer her. Besides, if we hadn't come here, Jamie would be dead, and maybe Jared, too. He would have died tonight without you. Death on every side, death everywhere I looked. Why did she have to follow me? I moaned to myself. I'm not hurting the other souls here, not really. I'm even saving some of their lives by being here, by keeping Doc from his doomed efforts. Why did she have to follow?
Why did they keep her? Mel snarled. Why didn't they kill her right away? Or kill her slow. I don't care how. Why is she still alive?
Fear fluttered in my stomach. The Seeker was alive. The Seeker was here. I shouldn't have been afraid of her. Of course, it made sense to be afraid that her disappearance would bring the other Seekers down on us. Everyone was afraid of that. Spying on the search for my body, the humans had seen how vocal she was about her convictions. She'd been trying to convince the other Seekers that there were humans hiding in this desert wasteland. None seemed to take her seriously. They had gone home. She was the only one who kept looking. But now she'd vanished in the middle of her search. That changed everything. Her vehicle had been moved far away, left in the desert on the other side of Tucson. It looked as though she'd disappeared in the same way it was believed I had. Pieces of her bag left torn nearby, the snacks she'd carried with her chewed open and scattered.